morning, everybody. The House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. I see a, don't have a timer here. It's not mine, but I like the concept. This morning, we're going to be, we have three bills on the agenda. We're going to be hearing two out of the three. First of all, SB 132, motor vehicle registration fees. The other one is SB 106, state land disposal, leaseholder preference, and House Bill 296, same subject. It's a companion bill, so we'll not be hearing, it's a companion bill to the previous SB 106, so we'll not be hearing that. Please take the roll.
Representative Gaddis? Representative Hughes?
Here.
Representative Isaacson?
Here.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Millett? Representative Christ Tompkins?
Here.
Chair Lynn?
Here. Okay, first up is CS for Senate Bill 132, with a sponsor. For that one, please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the House State Affairs Committee. My name is Senator Anna Fairclough. I represent East Anchorage and Eagle River. At the table with me is Tally Teal. She's my Resource Committee aide. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, SB 132 proposes to amend Alaska State Statute 2810-411F, which offers one exemption from a vehicle registration fee for a resident who is 65 on January 1st. Under the current law, if the person turns 65 today and tries to take advantage of this exemption, even though they're 65, they would be denied. They wouldn't qualify for an exemption that their peers would qualify for, effectively disqualifying them from receiving the same benefits as their peers. Because the Division of Motor Vehicles offers a biennial vehicle registration, a person could be 67 before they actually receive a benefit that they should have been eligible for at 65. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's really a cleanup. When a previous legislative body put January 1st of a year, they didn't realize the interpretation would be that people in Alaska who turned 65 and showed up at DMV on January 2nd wouldn't qualify.
Okay. Any questions? Resident Keller.
I'm ready to move the bill whenever you are, sir.
We should make a comment.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Senator, for doing this housekeeping, because as we all advance to that age and we know that we can forget, be more forgetful or just inconvenienced, this is satisfying the intention of the law, and so it gives the ability for the department to satisfy the spirit rather than the letter. So thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think I forgot, but I don't think I need to declare a conflict of interest because of my advanced age, but I do have I do have an exemption. You know, it's for one car only, and I've had that for several years now, but I think this is a very good bill. Without anybody online, any comments? Anybody in the audience, any comments? Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you. I just...
We do have something online.
Oh, do we? Are these for questions only? We have Joanne Olson, the DMV. Do you have any comments or questions? Ms. Olson, are you there?
Sorry, yes, I am.
Do you have any comments or questions on this bill?
No, we don't.
Thank you. And we have Amy Erickson, also from DMV. Any comments or questions on this bill? And there she is over there. Okay. If not, Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah. I just want to comment that every year is precious when you get past 65, so I'm glad you're doing it for the Alaskans, but also for DMV, it puts them in a really tough spot. So thanks for clearing up. I move CS for House Bill, or Senate Bill 132, State Affairs, version LS 1218, November, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Any objections? Not the bill passed from committee. That was a tough one. Back on the record. Also, like to recognize, please, that Esmond Gaddis is joined us.
Thank you.
We have two lands on the committee now, so we're ready to go. With the now going to Senate Bill. I'm going to put on my glasses. I'll see what it is. Senate Bill 132. Would the sponsor please come forward?
106.
106? Okay, we'll try 106.
We can do 132.
Yeah.
We just did.
Good morning. Please identify yourself and tell us about the bill.
Very good. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the State Affairs Committee. It's good to be back here. Also, I want to thank Representative Ledoux. She has the House companion to this bill. Senate Bill 106 is necessary to ensure the protection of state land or protection for state land leaseholders who have invested their business and who depend on these investments on this land for their livelihood. The bill is actually a result of a constituent of mine who brought this to my attention, that the state statutes do not protect or provide a way for state leaseholders to purchase the property that they've invested in. Many times it's millions of dollars of their retirement money that they've spent on land prior to the land then being conveyed to a municipality or a borough in an entitlement land selection. It's not uncommon for someone my age or anybody here to retire early, take their retirement money, and then go build a hunting or fishing lodge out in remote Alaska. And what happens is when municipalities or boroughs decide to form, they are allowed to choose particular land that they want. And occasionally, when they pick the land, they'll pick land that the leaseholders have invested money to build a hunting or fishing lodge. And then under the current statute, then that person who's built that hunting or fishing lodge has no recourse, no way to recoup their investment or to purchase the land from the state prior to it being conveyed. And we just feel like these Alaskans, a lot of these are old-time Alaskans, they deserve some protection from the municipality before that municipality takes that land from the state. So what this bill does, in a nutshell, it allows an individual to receive a no-bid first right of refusal preference if they meet certain conditions. First, they must have erected a building on the land. They must have used that land for a bona fide business purpose for at least the past 10 years. And the individual must rely on that business for 25% or more of their total income over that 10-year period. There's a zero fiscal note. We feel like this is a pro-Alaskan, pro-business piece of legislation to protect Alaskans who invested their money in remote parts of Alaska. It doesn't impact too many people. I think there's folks here from DNR. They anticipate that maybe there's 10 to 15 different individuals who have these type of situations that could be impacted. So it's not that many people, but if you're one of those 10 or 15, that's pretty important.
Yeah.
Yeah. This bill just recently passed the Senate floor. No opposition from the minority or the majority on this. And again, the muni who did select that land, if those 5 acres then are sold to the individual, the muni would get the money from that land, not the state. That's pretty much the bill in a nutshell. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Okay. Representative Garris.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Meyer. I guess my question is, and it's just kind of a learning aspect, but why non-competitive? That's the only part that I don't quite understand.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Representative Gaddis, I'm going to ask my trustee aide to answer that question. Some land is competitive and some is non-competitive. Edra, you probably have a better expert.
Good morning.
Morning. For the record, Edra Moorlidge, staff to Senator Meyer. This particular piece of legislation would only provide for folks who originally received their lease competitively. If they had received their original lease competitively, then they could exercise this first right of preference, no bid, non-competitively. So because they had originally competed for that property, then this would, and they have invested now in that piece of property, then that's why this one would be a no-bid preference.
I didn't get it.
And I'm going to follow up because that didn't quite answer it. Yes. Here is where I was coming from, and tell me where I'm flawed somewhere. So in my mind, and I'll just use myself as a lodge owner. I'm a lodge owner, and I have had a competitive bid to lease this property. I had a couple other people that wanted it, but I competitively got the property. I built a lodge. I created a business. I understand the first right of refusal. I mean, I'm right there. I mean, I put everything I have in this. I put blood, sweat, tears, that whole thing about. So now it comes to the time that they have, or it's an organized borough, whatever the reasons, somebody wants that property, and I should have the, I believe that I should have the first right of refusal to say, you know, I'd like to buy this property for fair market value. I see the reasons why it wouldn't be fair to have somebody to have a competitive bid. If you had another lodge, competing lodge, that would whipsaw this bid up there just to make their competitor a little bit tougher, and I have been portions of, I've been part of bids that have done that, and it doesn't seem fair, but I'm wondering what was the reason for the competitive versus the non-competitive?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gaddis, that might be better answered by a DNR who is here. I think they specifically wanted to only be on competitive land, not non-competitive. Okay, and I really don't know the answer to that.
Is someone from DNR here in the room?
I think so.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Comes the lifeline.
Sorry.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Wynn Menethee, Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water with DNR. The bill provides that first of all, the lease that would be eligible for this has to be offered competitively, just like Representative Gaddis had mentioned. The point at which a municipality comes and selects the land, and then you are going to have to make a disposal to that lessee under the preference right, there is no competition. There is no bidding at that point. It's just appraised fair market value sale. So the only competitiveness is initially when the person applied to get a lease. That's when the competition occurred. And at that point, as long as that person prevailed and got the lease and then invested all that income into that, then there's no more competition after that point.
And I guess I understand that there isn't, but my question was why. Was there an intent? Was there a reasoning behind it?
The investment. Representative through the chair, a preference right is essentially just that. It's a preference that says it recognizes that there is no competition, and all the preference rights that we have are non-competitive in that nature. So the bill as it was brought forward by the sponsor said that it was to essentially recognize the investment that the person had put into the land and because of that award them a preference.
Thank you. I got it.
Okay. Gaddis got it.
Gaddis got it. Thank you.
Okay. Reverend Isaacson.
Thank you. Good preceding question, and I'm glad you got that on the record. It is because of the investment. And on that, I have a couple questions. So is there ever a time when someone takes a lease that they do not establish a business, but they have other investment on that property that is substantial, whether it was revenue generating or not?
Sir?
Representative through the chair, I'm pondering just to try to think of if there's any situation like that. I'm thinking that they may invest on a business, and you're saying that they didn't actually develop the land. Is that the question?
They developed the land, but they did not do it for profit. They didn't do it as a business venture.
Okay, Representative through the chair, there's a separate type of lease that we do, which is public and charitable leases. It's under a different statute, and we do those. They're not for profit, but those are under 3805.810. It's a whole different statute. This preference right only deals with people that have applied and gotten a lease competitively under 3805.070. So it's a different statute.
So follow up,
follow
Mr.
up.
Chair.
Thank you.
Follow up.
Follow up.
Thank
yes.
you. So in that case, if there was a municipal entitlement selection, would they have a preference as well, or would their investment be lost to the selection?
Representative Isaacson, through the chair, are you referring to the not-for-profit?
Not-for-profit.
Okay, so the other ones, I believe, would not have a preference currently. I'm trying to think. Someone with a I don't think that they would have that. Now, under 810, there is a capability, and I'm doing this from memory, so I hope I get this all right, but I believe there is an ability to lease or to sell, and that is a decision that DNR has to make, whether that's appropriate for the area that they're applying for, and a lot has to do with the management plan, the classification of the land, and things like that. So there is another venue, but it's not necessarily a preference right.
So two follow-ups.
Follow-up.
So in that case, probably that should be handled in a follow-up or companion bill, or should it be added to this one, just to make sure that any investment on leasehold land is protected?
Representative through the chair, on a public and charitable, obviously, it's up to the legislature to decide what bills go with what, but it's a different statute, and all of our preference rights are specific to a certain statute. I would say that's a separate issue rather than trying to put it into this language, because this really hasn't addressed that other statute. I suggest that you also consider that somebody that puts investment into land doesn't necessarily lose their investment, and let me just clarify that. Okay, when somebody leases land, the first thing that they do is they put in an application and they say, what's my business plan of what I need to lease? And leases, the term of length that we decide to give somebody for their lease is contingent upon the type of investment they're doing. So essentially, we may give a 10-year lease, or we may give a 35- or 55-year lease, depending on the amount of investment somebody puts in. And we amortize it out and say, how long will it take you to get that investment recouped back? Now, all of our leases, every single one of them, say you got to remove everything afterwards, after you're done with that term. So they've made a business decision in investing on state land that says, I'm going to recoup my investment within the period of time which I have my lease. That doesn't mean that if it's not going good that we might be able to renew the lease later on because everything's going good. And then that is, I would say, pure profit off the top, more or less, because they've already supposedly recouped their investment in the first period. However, we lay over top of that the municipal entitlement. If a municipal entitlement comes along, the issue is that the lease doesn't go away at the point of the municipal entitlement. If we convey land over to a municipality, the municipality has to honor all the terms of the lease. If it was a 35-year lease and in year 10 of the lease it got conveyed over to the municipality, they still have those extra 25 years that they're going to have all their terms honored, so they can recoup all their investment. So they're not, quote, losing out on anything, but do they have longevity as in purchasing the land? And the answer would be for a public and charitable, no. But typically on a public and charitable, the reason why public and charitables typically don't end in a sale is because they're supposed to be used for that public and charitable purpose. If you put it over into a sale and they own the land, you haven't met that purpose because they get discounted price. They oftentimes, the public and charitables, get it less than fair market value and or free to use state land. And because of that, even if they're investing, they've already gotten a discount to have that investment on the land for a public and charitable sale. So hopefully I didn't confuse the issue, but I'm trying to expound a little bit so you understand.
No, your answer is my question. Mr. Chair, one last follow-up. So going back to that 25% of one's income derived, why this barrier? It seems somewhat artificial because if I'm a successful dentist, which I'm not, but I derive the majority of my money from my practice, and I have a hunting lodge that, you know, gets 8 weeks of activity. And so it doesn't necessarily constitute 25% of my income. But I have a significant investment in there. Now, however, because I didn't put more time into the lodge than I did into fixing people's teeth, and I'm just using this as a hypothetical, I don't get the same preference as the next person. Can you explain why this barrier of 25% income?
Representative through the chair, the barrier, as you speak to it, was a figure that was modeled after another preference right that was already in statute that the legislature already passed, and they had already set the barrier, as you say, or the threshold at that 25% of income. And I think the understanding, at least in my understanding of it, is that the reason for 25% of the income is what you're trying to address are the people that make their livelihood off of this. You're trying to preserve their capability of preserving their livelihood. The people that, I'll call it, dabble in it or put a part of their investment into it or it's just a side part of their whole portfolio, I think there wasn't as much concern about protecting everything that they have. Like I said, they can still realize their investment over the period of their lease. They just wouldn't be able to purchase it forever.
One last follow-up.
Go ahead.
Is that, so I know the answer to my question is that's up to the legislature. However, in the department's determination, and your determination when as the director, does that make sense? I mean, if one person puts in a couple hundred thousand dollars of investment and another person puts in a couple hundred thousand dollars of investment, but both of them are using it as retirement, as Senator Meyer was talking about, shouldn't both be protected for their investment regardless of percentage of income derived?
Representative through the chair, I think that when DNR looks at these things, we believe that anybody gets the lease has already protected their investment. The lease term itself is what protects the investment, because if somebody's going to make a business investment on a lease, they already know that they have to end at the end of the term of the lease. They have to realize that that is their investment, so they're already protected. Anything on top of that, which the choice of the legislature is, if the legislature says we want to be able to sell it to that individual to even further that investment, that is what we would consider over the top of the original business risk analysis.
Thank you.
Did it answer it?
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking of survivability, but the director answered the fact that the lease itself sets the term, and so in a business model, that is a satisfactory answer. I have no.
Thank you. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to sync up the part that's already in statute at the top of page 2, where it tells the director can reject the application or put certain conditions on it based on the need for public use by residents of the area. So I'm trying to sync that up with the new section where it's a municipality or a local government that is selected some land, and now we have a private person who's leasing who has the right for a non-competitive bid, and it's a municipality or local government seeking the land, so I would think that would be for public use. And so I'm concerned about that individual, the private individual application being considered, because it seems like it would be easy for the director to make the argument that this is for public use, so we're going to reject it. So how is that going to work?
Representative Hughes, to the chair, I think that when we read the part that says that to mitigate adverse effects on the public or may reject the application for the preference right, so of public use, it's not necessarily the public use of that parcel, but public use as in, let's say you have a very narrow valley and the lease sits right at the basically the only place you can access through there, and the use is constricted so that it has to cross through that parcel. That would be a public use idea where you would say if there's not an easement or something that goes through that, conceivably you could block other use of other state lands. That's the more of the way that we would look at it than rather than the 5 acre. And just keep in mind that the original lease may be for 20 acres. What this either of these preference rights are only granting is 5 acres. So it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get everything through the preference right that you originally had as a lessee. It's only granting 5 acres, and they have to pick and choose what of those 5 acres is most important to them. Now, so that's essentially to answer your question, I think I did, about the use. Our thought is when we say, like in the new statute, if the director determines the purchase of the land would interfere with public use by residents of the area, we would not, under the lease itself, assume that if you're going to sell a 5 acre parcel, or typically when you have the lease, you've given more or less an exclusive right to that acreage already. So the use has been restricted in some way, but I think you start talking about physical constraints to the other land surrounding. Is it going to impact that? As to your question, why the municipality actually selects it, and are we going to, you know, that they did it for public use. When a municipality selects land, they can do it for a sundry different reasons, because they want to gain revenues off of it, because there's some other purpose that they want to fulfill on it. There may be multiple reasons why. This doesn't actually tell us to determine why the municipality selected the land, and that's not part of actually the decision on this.
Okay.
Your follow-up?
Thank you, and I have a bill up, so I'm going to ask a question and leave. But I'm wondering whether it sounds like it's a narrow definition of public use, so access. So if we're selecting it for a town site or something, but it's not restricting, like you said, access. So is there a narrow definition of public use that would apply to this, so that the private individuals would know, or is it just to the discretion of the director?
Representative, through the chair, it's to the discretion of the director, the way it reads. And we don't have a specified definition for that. So it's an interpretation.
Anything else?
Thank you, and I have a bill up in finance, so I'm going to have to leave. But that is a little concerning that it's not defined, but so I will just leave it with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck with your bill. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Any Senator Myers? Any other? I have some other folks online here.
No, just Jerry. I think there's some folks at Chesapeake.
I have a Mel Gillis from Anchorage. Are you in the room or online, Mel Gillis?
I'm online, sir.
Yeah. Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself and speak your mind on Senate Bill 106.
Okay. My name's Mel Gillis, and I guess I'm the 10 to 15 people that have this problem. The problem is this bill would do good to keep people like myself from going out and put in a good, big improvement. Mine's a couple of million dollars, and having it taken away from us. When the borough decides they would like to have our 5 acres of land. And let's see. If this would just stop people that do have big investments out on the lease land. In my case, I've been trying to buy this piece of property since 1984. And the borough decided they wanted it because it had value and it had access. And access was a runway that my son and I took 3 years to build. And the value was my lodge there. And there's quite a few people in the state, I think probably more than Mr. Menifee said, that have this problem. So this would be a good first step in trying to get the people in Alaska, the ones that do make our livings out in the bush, kind of halfway protected. That's about what I have to say, sir.
Very good. I appreciate that. Out of curiosity, approximately where is your property located?
Or the property? It's approximately 480 miles west of Anchorage.
I see. Okay.
Between Cold Bay and Port Hyde.
I see.
Okay. And if I could say one other thing, sir.
Sure.
You know, under municipal entitlement, the boroughs, the law says they can only have vacant, unappropriated, and unreserved land. So we need to get a good definition of vacant. DNR has their own definition of vacant. So 5 acres with $1.5 million, $2 million worth of investment is vacant, according to DNR.
I see. Thank you. We may have a question for you. Representative Gannis.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Willis. I have had the opportunity to speak to Mr. Willis, and he is quite eloquent and quite passionate, and he's on to something here, you know. I think that I was trying to figure out where this bill was going and who it was helping, and that, and now that I can understand, I like to say I have had a great conversation with him. So that was a good investment there, Mr. Gillis, as you took the time with me a couple weeks ago, because I fully understand what the issue is. So thank you for stepping forward.
Any other questions or comments to Mr. Willis? Thank you very much, sir. Can you read this?
Oh, he already testified. Okay.
Yeah. Anybody else in the room who would like to testify? Anybody else on the line who would like to testify? Not, we're closed. Public testimony. Let's get some comments around the table here. Any discussion, questions? Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is a question for the sponsor, but is the need to clarify the term vacant necessary for the passage of this bill? And perhaps I can direct that then to
Representative, you're still representing to us because you deserted and went to the dark side over there. Senator Meyer.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Isaacson. You know, I was pondering that. I don't think we need to define vacancy at this particular point in time, but let me ask my trusty staff here what she thinks.
For the record, Edwin Morledge, through the chair, Representative Isaacson. I think that that might be something that we would want to address in the future when we're dealing with a separate statute that details how a municipal entitlement is conveyed. But I think that for the purposes of what we're trying to accomplish, that we don't need to include that in this bill.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Keller.
I just want to thank the sponsor for bringing this forward, doing things like this to get hands into land into the hands of Alaskans is something that I really approve of in the process of looking for the, the pitfalls and everything that you've taken on. I appreciate it. So, but I'm ready to move the bill if there's no other questions.
I appreciate that, Representative Keller. And as Mel Gillis, who is my constituent, had indicated, he's been frustrated with this since 1984. And it doesn't help his situation, but it's going to help future Alaskans. And, because of that, we felt like it was the right thing to do.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Keller.
Yeah, I'd like to move SB 106, version LS0864, that's version Charlie, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Without objection, the bill moves. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thursday, and we'll be considering House Bill 293. That's the Bear license plate, B-E-A-R, not B-A-R, is B-E-A-R, and SB 116, service of citation, and HB 216, official languages of the state. Anything else to come before the committee? If not, thank you for your service this morning, and good day. We are adjourned.